What's going on, y'all? You already know what it is. If you found yourself here, then you are listening to In Pursuit of Purpose podcast. It is your host, Marcus, aka the King of Podcasts. Yes, I said that and I meant it. You better get tuned into these facts. To the show, y'all. It is your boy once again. I've already said it, don't need to say it again. Today we have a great show for you, a special show for you, one that introduces a friend. We have interviewed a great chef. It's going to be a dynamic show, trust me on this. Her name is Dynamis Day and she goes by Chef D Sauce. And I'm not making that up when I say her last name is Sauce, because that truly is her last name, Sauce. It's only right for someone with the name Sauce to be a chef, right? Well, this interview took place over a Skype interview, and I just wanted to preface you with that so you know that what you're getting ready to listen into is a Skype call that we held together. I was in South Dakota for a week, North Dakota and South Dakota. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful places to go. I mean, the saying about the Dakotas is there's nothing there. That's not true for the Dakotas. That's actually true for Montana because I drove through there. But that's not true for the Dakotas. The Dakotas are absolutely beautiful. I got to visit on Mount Rushmore. I've got to see and stay in Custer Park, which is in South Dakota. And these are just two of the most beautiful states I've ever been in. And I've seen bison, which I haven't seen in so long because, yeah, it's been forever since I've never seen one. but these bison are just remarkable beasts to just be in front of. I mean it. And I was in South Dakota and I had did an interview with Chef and we just had a great experience, a great time. And I kind of just want you to hear what we talked about because she's a vegan chef. And we touched on a lot of the topics about veganism, the myths about veganism, the story behind being a vegan and the truths about these things. And she has great experience in the field of being a vegan. Now, this woman is an expert, 18 years vegetarian, 14 years vegan. She knows what she's talking about. She brings nothing but the goods. She's going to deliver nothing but just great content for you. And I'm thankful for her. And I'll give you more details about where you can find her because you're not going to want to miss out on that part of the show where you can find her contact information. Okay, so here it is, the interview nonetheless, me and Chef. Let's go. Welcome to In Pursuit of Purpose podcast. It is your host, Marcus Clark, aka Mark, my words. And I am here today to do, you know, another dynamic show, another dynamic interview that I'm about to lay on the people right now. So, without further ado or anything being said to add to this introduction, because I hate to prolong things, I really, really, really want to say this to the people, to the audience that's going to be listening to this. You need to hear this interview and you need to stick this interview out. You need to go all the way through, like go through, do not move. Okay. So today I have a guest I have a guest on the show with me. She is,
when I talk about being a chef, I'm talking about being a chef. And I'm not just saying like chef in the terms that you identify or the definition of what you identify as, but a chef in the sense where it's like, yeah, she not, you know, most chefs can do are one-sided. This chef is, I know, double-sided. Like, she can cook vegan food and regular food. Some chefs are so used to eating regular food, cooking regular food, that they don't know how to do vegan food. So, now that I gave all the goods away, I have a guest on the show with me. She is a vegan chef. She is a dynamic person that I've been able to talk to over the course of a couple of days. I met Chef D on Facebook, as I find most of my guests online. And I just remember how I wanted to interview a vegan chef, and Chef D came rolling down my timeline. So I want to introduce to you properly the one and the only Chef D. She has been working as a vegan chef for 8 years. She cooks everything vegan as a sous chef at, check this out, y'all, at the Menla Tibetan Buddhist Retreat. Oh my God. In the Catskills of New York. Now, before we go into what Chef D does, I like to find out who Chef D is. Chef D, let us get to know why or who is Chef D. That's what I think we want to know first before we get into the goods of what I got, because trust me, I got some good stuff for you. So, Chef D, tell us who you are.
Well, greetings, everyone. That was a really beautiful introduction. Thank you so much for that. Really grateful and appreciative to have the opportunity to speak today on your show. Who I am, that's quite a large question, especially for an hour.
Hey, it's we got to go into that part. People were like, who is Chef D? Because that's what they're going to be thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who am I? That's the question we all ask, right? I am a chef, without a doubt. Most of my days are spent making delicious, nutritious food for the good people, for the folk. I'm also a mother of two beautiful teenage daughters. I'm a friend. I'm a lover. I'm a traveler through this universe. I'm just really appreciating every moment and learning and growing and helping others along the way. And just doing my part to, you know, be the best me all the time. So whatever questions you may want to ask, go right ahead.
Excuse me. I'm excited about this interview, really, because I'm really, number one, I'm excited that, you know, knocking on this wood here, we keep this strong connection going, because I'm feeling this right now and I'm feeling the energy here. And I really want to, like, I want this podcast. I want this show. I really want this show to touch people, because in the uplifting way, because so many people have questions about being vegan that I've been in that arena for a while. And I kind of know, because I've traversed that field, not as a vegan chef, but as a vegan, and I had traversed that field. So I kind of know some things, some ins and outs on how to cook vegan food, but I'm not going to claim to be a vegan chef. But I want to know, and I think the people want to know, but more so, I want to know. I say more so because the first couple of questions usually always pertain to things I'm intrigued by. And then I kind of like go into questions that I think the audience wants to know. But I really want to know, like, because I'm into stories. And so I want to know what started your journey. Tell me what started your vegan journey.
That's a wonderful place to start. So I would say my vegan journey really began, well, the roots of my vegan journey really began way before I realized it. I was raised, my parents owned a pet store, and I was raised pretty much from my mother was pregnant with me, I literally slept on bags of birdseed and I in the store, and I used to help take care of all the animals. So I always had animals around me from the time I came out the womb, I had all kinds of animals in my life. So I always prided myself on being an animal lover and almost always feeling more connected to animals than even humans a lot of the time because of the unconditional love that they give. So I had already kind of had that seed in me, but you know, I didn't really think about what I was eating growing up because, you know, we call it meat and things like that. So we don't really, we disguise it, what it really is. And then I would say about the year 2000, around 1999, 2000, one of my sisters had went veg and, you know, she started talking to me about it and opening my eyes to some things. And I was a little hesitant at first, a little resistant, but I watched a video called Meet Your Meat that PETA had put out. And that was a 10-minute video footage of animals in the slaughterhouse. And it literally, like, within the first 30 seconds, I just realized that I did not want to contribute to the suffering of any a being like that. You know, I just, I never allowed myself to see it. I never, you know, it was just like, I didn't want to. The cognitive dissonance was strong. But once I saw that video, I realized that that it wasn't about health or anything else. It was just straight, like, I cannot contribute to suffering of other beings that I would say are my friends, that I can't call myself an animal lover and then also contribute to this happening to them. So that kicked it off for me.
Wow. I like that, sleeping on bags of bird seed. That is a that is a catchy phrase. That's something I'm going to remember for a while.
Literally. And I remember we used to sell millet spray on the stick to birds, and I never thought of it as a human food. And now I make it all the time, and it's alkaline and it's really fantastic. And it's beyond the birds. So.
Okay. Wow. I mean, you know, that would definitely, I think that would definitely start someone off being a vegan. You said being friends and you seeing these animals as your friends and, you know, growing up, as you say, being little growing up and, being around it, I think that's a great way to start out being a vegan. Let me ask you, when did you know that a vegan chef career, when did you know, when you became a chef or when you started cooking, how did you know you had a love for cooking or how did you know you had a love for, you know, this industry, because I've been in it before. It's a tough industry. And I'm not talking about tough to like make it as a career, but tough to stay in it because of the stress and the pressure on you. Let me ask, like, when did you know that you wanted to become a chef or a cook?
I think it just naturally, organically happened. I was not a good cook. My children, they still make fun of me for how I couldn't even make pancakes right. So when people say, oh, you know, they think like, oh, this must have been like my career choice. Like from the time I was little, I used to pretend that like to make food like mud pies and use my mother's, you know, Betty Crocker book and go outside and try to find the things that would look, you know, closest to the ingredients and things like that. But I really didn't think of myself as being a chef. But a few years into being vegan, well, I went veg first and then vegan within the next couple of years from there. But I was my partner at the time was a vegan chef. He had been studying with Dr. Sabi, and he really started putting me on to things, and I began to prepare food. I started a lot more with raw vegan, and I just realized as I kept doing it that I really, really loved it, and I just kept getting better at it. So I really was just watching videos and watching, you know, other people who I knew could cook vegetables well. And the more that I did it, the better I was at it, and I really, really loved it. And I found it so rewarding, soul rewarding, to feed my food to others, and the expressions on their faces and their responses was soul rewarding. Like, it fed me back in such an amazing way that I never experienced. And then from there, it came through me. It wasn't even like a conscious decision. It just was like, wow, okay, I guess I'm a chef and I'm good at it.
It was just there in you. Like,
it was there. Yeah. It was just already there. And it took a little bit of obviously work and practice. I never went to formal training in it, like schooling or anything like that. But once I realized I had a knack for it, And then opportunity just kept opening up prepare, you know, private chefing for others and events. And then I began incorporating teaching, plant-based life and why behind the food, because I think it's really important to have the holistic understanding of why plant-based and just the way that my body felt and my spirit felt. And then all the food that I wanted to eat, I couldn't always get it. So it just made sense to make it myself.
Wow. Another good phrase, holistic understanding. You are a bunch of phrases today, aren't you?
Ah, gem dropping.
Holistically understanding. I get that, you know, something that calls you. And that's why I love interviewing people who I see flourishing and nourishing in their purpose. That's why I like talking to these kind of people, because I can see a flow going on there. And I don't have to guess or ask, like, I could tell, like, this was something that was in that person, like it just oozes out of them. And it's not something that is forced upon them. Like you said, you didn't get any formal education, and that's okay. You know, who has, you know, not everybody has to go to school to be great at what they do. And, you know, to just know that that came from you. That's, you know, that's mostly how a lot of people find their purpose. It's just going through those, you know, those adaptations of, you know, lifestyle changes and things. And when that thing comes about, it just happens so naturally, and you know exactly what it is you want to do. One of the things I want to ask is, like, is it harder making vegan food versus non-vegan food?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Is it harder making vegan food versus non-vegan?
The only non-vegan food that I make, because I'm a sous chef at Menla, which is primarily vegetarian, but they do some non-vegan things in the sense of eggs in the morning. So I've had to do that. Although I do, give thanks for every single egg as I'm preparing it and thanking the chickens. And, you know, I try not to think about what may be happening from, you know, that those eggs getting to me, but it's part of the job that, you know, that it just comes with it. And it's not hard. Ironically, I wasn't even good at making eggs before I went vegan. And when I'm vegan, I make them and I don't even know how they taste. And I think the hardest thing for me is when I do make like something like that. I don't cook meat. That's for me, that's where my morals like absolutely like end as far as what I'm going to be willing to do outside of veganism. I would never cook flesh. However, I do my best to try to help inform people why not to eat eggs and things of that nature when they ask me. But I am phasing out of all of that and 100% back to my own flow, so that I won't even have to do that anymore. But it's not hard for me to do anything vegan, because anything can be veganized. I mean, they're pretty much anything that people love to eat out there that they're used to eating, because a lot of it is the nostalgia and just what, you know, comfort and what you're used to. But you could pretty much veganize anything. And it's getting a lot easier now in the world compared to when I first started this journey. Mm-hmm. Just the options that are out there. So
yeah, that's like, see, the thing is, vegan eggs, where do you find those? Because I've seen vegan eggs in the grocery store and I'm like, yeah, those are not eggs. You know what I mean? Like, not saying real eggs, but how do you make vegan eggs?
Well, the thing is, you can't, when it comes to like eggs and cheese and things of that nature, I don't like cheese. They're coming out with a lot more cheeses now that taste more like, you know, the real deal. Eggs are tricky. I mean, the egg is it's the period of a chicken. I mean, it's literally like the chicken's period. So like, you know, if you're okay eating that, you know, that's, you know, I tell people like, at least try to get from chickens that, you know, that aren't harmed, that, you know, whatever. But there is something called Just Egg. I haven't personally tried it yet, because I don't care enough. I don't really miss eggs like that to want an egg replacement, in a sense of like a scrambled egg form. But you can do like tofu scrambles, which even with the soy, I wouldn't recommend, but they have hemp tofu now that you can like scramble up and put different seasonings to make it taste similar to scrambled eggs. There's so many egg replacers that when you're using for, say, baking or other, you know, dishes that would include egg, you can use things like flax seed that's ground up, added a little water. It makes like an egg consistency. You can use applesauce. You can use bananas. So there's so many ways to get what the purpose of the egg is in a dish for without actually having to eat the egg. As far as getting something that is like an egg, from what I'm told from my other vegan people and chefs, they say that the Just Egg by the Just Company is the closest that you get and actually cooks up like a scrambled egg. So they're really coming out with some incredible products now on the market. You know,
yeah.
But I haven't personally eaten an egg since like, I don't know, 2004, 2005.
Wow, that's a long time. Yeah. That's a long time. I think you can bake without an egg. I think the purpose of the egg is to kind of like give it the fluffiness, you know, right, when you're baking, give it that fluff. I think you can bake without it, but it just wouldn't be as sweet or as fluffy, I would think.
I can prove you wrong there, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just about getting the consistency. The thing is, when it comes to switching to plant-based, you know, you want to keep the flavors and the consistency are what people are about. You know, that's what's familiar. And the flavors, everything's flavored with plants. I mean, even all meat that people prepare, they prepare it with plant flavor. They're not going to just eat the raw piece of meat. Mostly, most people want the flavor of plants because that's actually what we crave, is the plant. So you can use the plant flavor and then you get the consistency to be similar to what you're used to. Then you can feel completely satisfied without, you know, feeling like you're missing anything. And actually you're physically lighter, spiritually lighter from not ingesting those things that come from animals.
Mm, yeah. I go back to that word where you say, I would never cook flesh. I'm like writing all these kinds of things down that just like hitting me like, okay, she's just like a cold stone reminder of why you should go vegan. You know what I mean? And it's kind of cool to just have this, you know, these little gems you keep dropping on me. So it's like, okay. So, but let me ask you this. What's the myth you hear about? What's the myths that you hear about vegan food or about vegans? I guess that's a two-part question. So I'll ask it again. What's the myth that you hear about vegan food or about vegans?
Well, there's a few. I mean, the number one myth of all, and every vegan vegetarian in the world probably hears it multiple times a day, it is, where do you get your protein? I mean, protein is the biggest myth that ever like hit the food scene, because all protein originates in plants, all of it. Mm. So anywhere people ask me that, like where I got my protein is from whatever you ate got their protein. I just, you don't skip the chain. It's like the largest land mammals on the planet. I usually start there. Like, what's the largest land mammal on the planet that you can think of off the top of your head?
An elephant.
All right. What's it eat?
It eats grass, trees.
Yeah. And it's giant and muscular.
And it's giant, very
and wise and in tune and amazing. Yep. So the largest land mammals, the longest living animals are vegetable-based eaters. They get everything they need from plants. So, you know, people have the misconception about protein, and a lot of that was started from the food pyramid, which is bogus. It was created for the industries to make money. It was never created for your health. And calcium, and, you know, like same thing, calcium from plants. You know, everything that people think you need to get from animal products is not true. Because you can get what you need without the side effects of the animal product does to our bodies. The other misconception, I don't know, we only eat grass and rabbit food, boring food. You know, I love my favorite parts of being a vegan chef is just busting through the misconceptions about vegan food tasting like lame or plain or, you know, no options, like you just eat a bag of carrots. So, you know, that one is another big one as well, or that you're too, you know, they're skinny or unhealthy or I mean, you know, that those are some other ones that I probably hear pretty often.
That's pretty much been the topic about vegans, is the fact that, oh, where do you get your protein? That's kind of crazy, because you almost answered one of my questions, and the question I was going to go into is basically, you know, protein. It's like, where do you, you know, what's the biggest lie about, what's the biggest lie about plants or about protein that is that people say that they don't provide, you know, plants don't provide enough protein. So, I mean, what's the biggest lie about protein that you've heard? I kind of know you kind of answered it, but you didn't really, you went into, you were answering another question. So tell me about, like, what's that, what's the lie about protein that you hear?
That people think, the idea is that you need to eat the body of another being to get protein to build your body. But it's like, that's like saying drink blood for iron. You know what I mean? It's like, why? You don't need to do that. And then you think about, like I said, all the other animals on the planet that are huge, like horses and cows and all, they all eat plants. So all protein, the amino acids are all within the plants already. And if you eat a well-balanced diet, like, you can get protein from just about anything. There's very few things that don't have any protein. Like, and as a human, we need very little amount of protein. Even a breast milk composition for a baby, it's low protein. It's not a lot of protein. We just need a little bit. Mostly we need minerals, but the protein, you can get it from just about anything you eat. You'd literally have to be starving to death to die of a protein deficiency. Like, you would have to have nothing going in your body at all. Because you just easily get protein. And I would have been dead. I've been vegetarian for almost 18 years. You know, I would have been dead a long time ago if I needed that to live. And I'm actually, I feel better than I did in my 20s now. So,
Now let me ask, there's a lot of people out there, you know, vegans, bodybuilders showing you that you can have a body as big as any other bodybuilder and be a vegan. And I've seen it both ways. I've seen people that are vegans and they go into bodybuilding to kind of prove to people that you can get proteins from other plants, from plants and not just from animals. And you can still build up muscle mass. And I've seen it happen in the reverse way, which is the way I've done it, where I was eating vegan and I didn't go to the gym. And I was showing people that you can still have a chisel or defined body without needing to go to the gym. Because if you're eating right and you're eating the right food and you're eating the right protein, if you're eating vegan, you can eat vegan and still have a nice natural body. And that's what I was showing people with my body, how you could have a natural body, muscle defined body, being a vegan. And I showed people that, and I didn't go to the gym and lift one weight. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I didn't go to the gym and lift one weight. So I was showing people both sides. I wasn't doing the bodybuilding side, but I seen people do the bodybuilding side. But I did it the opposite way, where it was like, I'm gonna show you that I could still be muscular, chiseled, and don't have to go to the gym and lift one weight, and I'm gonna just eat all plant-based food. And I did that, and I look better even still today, because I still, now I go back to the gym, I work out, but I still don't lift weights. Like, I don't lift, because I've realized that you're not supposed to put weights on your body, because it disjoints your joints and your muscles. So I do workouts, but I don't do weight lifting. You know what I mean? So there's a big difference in what
I do. Yeah, you end up more defined, because when the body is getting the food that it's designed to consume and you're staying active, you will naturally have the form that, you know, that you should with the muscle, and you have less of the toxins and all the fats and everything that's going to put more fat on the body that hides the muscle. The other point I wanted to make about the protein with the amino acids, when you consume an animal protein, your body doesn't just use those proteins instantly like it would with plants. So with plants, all the amino acids are formed. Your body creates the protein and then uses the protein. But when it's an animal protein, your body has to break all those essential amino acids down to then rebuild them to properly for your use. It doesn't just automatically get used. So that's more, it takes more energy to break down animal protein. So you're actually conserving energy, and you just feel the difference. You feel lighter, you feel more in tune with everything in your body and spirit. So,
yeah, one of the things you ever heard of, you may have heard of Dr. Bruce Lipton, huh?
Of course, yeah. Of course, the Biology of Belief. He's one of my favorites.
Biology of Belief. Yes, he wrote that book, and he said that microRNAs are still alive in your food and animal food when you eat. That's why he said the saying "You are what you eat" is true. It's absolutely true, because he's saying when you're eating meat, even though it's dead and slaughtered and been preserved in your freezer and all of that, he said that there's microRNAs still alive inside those foods that do not die. They cannot die. And so this is why I think you see people that eat like red meat, they got anger problems and stuff like that, because they're still eating cells, micro cells of these animals that are very testosterone and a lot of high testosterone in them, like bulls and beef. And you know, these animals are very, got high testosterone levels. And so you see a lot of people that eat high doses of red meat, beef and all that kind of stuff there. You'll see those character traits play out because they're showing anger issues and stuff like that. And that's just something that's very true when it comes to you are what you eat. I totally believe that.
Yes.
There's no myth about that, that actually leads me to another question then, which is pretty cool because we're on that you are what you eat kind of thing. So let me ask, can a person be vegan and then truly be spiritual? Because to me, let me explain this. Because to me, to be spiritual is to be, to be spiritual is to love animals as well. You know this because you would know this because of Thich Nhat Hanh, who I've heard him talk about, he don't eat animals because of this reason. You know, he talks about the connection with animals. And so that makes me ask that question, like, can a person be vegan and truly be spiritual? Because to be spiritual is to love animals and to love life. And am I right about that? Am I right?
You're right. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Absolutely. It's definitely a sensitive topic to those who still consume animals and consider themselves spiritual. And I'm not here to say anyone is or isn't spiritual. I think that, I'm speaking general, but here's my my insight on it. So yes, we are what we eat. And not only are we taking in that physical part of that, of the entity, like was it an animal or the plant, but you're also consuming of what that animal went through. So if you're eating meat, you're consuming the fear, because every time an animal right before slaughter, doesn't matter if it's humane, and that's a whole, and that I don't, there's no such thing as humane meat. I think it's an oxymoron, but it doesn't matter how people believe, like, oh, it lived a nice life and then I killed it. Like, I loved it more than I slaughtered it. So it's like, it's still going to be terrified. It still knows it's going to die. The cows have tears in their eyes as they wait in line. They know it's coming. So you're consuming the terror. You're consuming the depression. When you're consuming dairy products, that's a whole nother. I mean, we could go on hours just about that. You're consuming the grieving mother's energy from the baby being stolen, from her being raped, from her milk being stolen from her while her baby is gone and she's mourning the death of that baby. Like, you're consuming on an energetic level. You're consuming everything that the animal went through that you ate. So you can't avoid that. And that's going to be part of what you're feeling. And you may not even be in tune enough to know, like, I'm feeling really sad or aggressive today because of an animal, like you just ate a cow, a piece of a cow that had went through so much right before death. Mm. So, and that energy is like preserved in those cells before it dies. And like you say, you can't cook it out. You can't freeze it out. It's there. Mm-hmm. So on a spiritual level, personally, when I stopped eating animals and their products, I mean, it's like a completely different way in a spiritual sense. Like, I felt like this in deep compassion and connection for everything. You know, people go into the whole plants have feelings too and blah, blah, blah. And that's a whole nother level. But we're talking about something that can look you in the eye with their eyes and run away because it does not want it. You know, so spiritually now, I know at one point, yes, Native Americans and other people in history who needed to eat meat to survive in cold climates. I really believe that if you're going to do it and you need to and you can't go to the store and you're going to die, you know, the ones that will go out and do it, in the most non-harmful way possible, or as far as like not extra suffering. And then giving thanks and using every single part of the animal and praying over that animal. And they made it a spiritual experience because they knew that they were taking a life for theirs, so that it was mindful. You know, people don't eat mindful anymore. They just go eat whatever. They don't care. They don't think about what happened. They don't care that, you know, something was suffering and died for that when you don't need to. We don't need to. You know, there's so many plant foods out there. You could just go eat anywhere. So,
That's.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. No, I'm in awe of this. I'm in awe of all of this because, number one, you said there's no such thing as humane meat. Not, and like, that's so true because I look at it like, it's like, yeah, it's like trying to tell somebody right before you put the gun to their head and you're about to kill them and you say, hey, I love you. I really love you to death, but I got to kill you. And it's like, well, right. That defeats the purpose of you loving me. It's
right,
like,
right. Well, I treated you good. You know, I gave you grass to lay on, and you know, I gave you some sunshine on your face before I slit your throat. You know,
right? So, yeah. I had this one girl tell me. I had this one girl. She told me. She said, she's not vegan anymore. She said, I was vegan, and I'm not vegan anymore. But she said, but this time, she said, I raise my own chickens, and I get to know my chickens. And I'm like, okay, I say, so she eats like chicken and stuff, right? But she was trying to define or trying to justify like the reason for killing her chickens. And she was like, I'm not vegan anymore. I used to be, but you know, I raise my own chickens and I get to know my chickens and I get to, you know, I talk to my chickens and my chickens, they understand that, you know, it's for both of us. They understand, right. Like she was trying to make it sound like the chickens understood their purpose in life was to, you know, be off for our survival.
Right. And they were jumping right into the guillotine, right? That's what they wanted.
I have to say something, though. I have to ask this, though, because I heard this and it actually threw me for a loop. I was like, didn't hear this before. Like, never heard it like that. Somebody said to me that we, you know, how they say we should be vegans. Like, you know, we should not eat animals. But I heard somebody say to me, but we are, you know, like a lion that eats a zebra or a gazelle or something like that. They're saying that we are a part of that same chain. You know, we as humans, we are a part of nature. We're not separate from nature. We're not separate from animals. We are a part of animals. We're a part of that whole system, this whole system. And so they eat just like they eat for survival. It's like the same thing with us. It's like, we're eating, you know, them, and it's all a part of that one chain. We're all a part of this one chain. It's natural selection type of system where it's like they take them out and we take them out and we get taken out by something even bigger and more powerful than us, you know? And huh. What do you think about that system, that belief, that mindset?
I mean, well, I just say, I like to start by saying, like, an alien race came down on this planet right now, and they said that, you know, they wanted to eat us because we're lower on the food chain, and they were going to do it humanely. You know, they were going to keep us in the grass and then, you know, then line us up and slice our throats and eat us. I don't think anybody would say that, well, it's just part of the food chain and let's just line up and let the aliens kill us and eat us. I mean, it's like we are conscious beings so that we have the ability to have to see, you know, to see things beyond what animals are able to see so that we can actually be a guardian and protect other and other beings. But when you break it down into just simple science, like if you look at the digestive system of a human, there's nothing about humans that are carnivore or even omnivore, because every single omnivore and carnivore on the planet, other than vultures that eat dead carcasses on the side of the road, you know, they eat live, they eat their prey live. So
yeah.
they would, you know, they have long claws, they have really long sharp teeth, their jaws don't go side to side, they just swallow it. They have a stomach acid that's so low, it's like a 3, that can break down all the bacteria and everything in a dead piece of meat. They will actually like dive into their, you know, to their prey with their bare teeth, their bare claws. They'll drink the blood. They'll rip it apart. They'll eat it right then and there. They don't cook it. They don't, you know, mask it as something else. They don't like a corpse. Once, I mean, if you killed say you killed an animal and left it for even half hour and it's warm, it's going to get disgusting, you know? Our systems are not built to consume animal products. We can, but it's just not our design. Are you familiar with Dr. Milton Mills? I think he's a really awesome, excellent reference. If anybody's interested in really digging in and looking, he has several YouTube videos where he explains how we are herbivore frugivores by design, by our even the saliva in our mouths to our teeth. I mean, people say, oh, these canines. I mean, come on. There's no way those little front teeth are designed to rip into. It's for tearing leaves. Our side to side action for grinding, our digestive tract, which is very long. The food goes through for, you know, quite a long process. And in carnivores, it has to get out very quickly because it starts to rot inside the body. So if you're eating a piece of meat and it could last 6 weeks in your body rotting, and then all that bacteria is released into your body, it's like, do you want to be a graveyard? Like, do you want to put a corpse into your living body and like think that that's actually going to bring you life? I mean, people come with all these reasons why to back up their cognitive dissonance or the reasons behind eating meat. But really, when you break it down, we're just not designed for it. We're herbivore, frugivore by design. Science shows it. There's plenty of information out there where you can compare the anatomy. And you see all of these diseases happening from people eating animal products. There's no one that says, oh, you got to get healthy, so go eat meat and cheese all day and you're going to get better. People say, stop eating that, you know, and your body will heal itself, you know. So,
Yeah. Wow. So we don't need meat, as some people say, to survive, huh?
I mean, I have people argue and people have their reasons why, like, oh, we're my particular type or blood type or blah, blah, blah. But I mean, you know, and people, they have their reasons. They have their reasons and they have every right, to believe and feel what they want. And it's their, you know, their decision. But from what I've seen and my research and my understanding, we're not designed to consume animals. We can, and it's helped, in the past when, like I said, people had been starving and things like that, and there was no vegetation to eat, but it's not in our design.
You know something, I want to corroborate with you on that part. When you look back in like even the biblical times, and I'm not here to, you know, talk about Bible things, but I read the Bible and I know that, you know, if you go back to the beginning, it says that God did what? If we're to truly believe that this Bible theory exists and is real and all that, I'm not saying it doesn't or it does. I'm just saying if we were to buy into the Bible theory, right, the stories, in the Bible, what does it even go in the beginning? This kind of gives you an understanding of who we were to be as a human species. And in the beginning of the Bible, it says what? That God put Adam and Eve in what? The Garden of Eden. And he had them surrounded, you know, by all this, you know, vegetation, right, you know, in the Garden of Eden. And they were to eat from any what that they could want? Any tree. Any tree that they wanted to, they could eat from. And so that gives me the notion and reminds me of the truth that if we're going to buy into the theory of the Bible, but even so, if we don't, you know, just looking at it as a story, you know, a fairy tale book, whatever, however you want to look at the book.
Right.
But when you look at it, though, and it talks about man in the beginning of life and being inside the Garden of Eden, eating from trees.
You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of metaphors in the Bible. And I think when people take them literal and then, you know, with the translation over time and everything like that. But even in the beginning of any being, like you have, in order to create a tool to hunt, because you're not going to just jump on the animal and rip it into its throat with your teeth. I mean, maybe there's a few out there that'll do that, but you know, that's a whole nother story of humanity's, strangeness. But you would need to create a tool, and in order to get the energy to create a tool, you'd need to eat something. So like you eat vegetables first and foremost. I mean, even no matter what anyone wants to think, say that we need a little bit of meat or whatever they think, like we're primarily vegetarian. You know, the fruit's the waiting for us to grab it, to eat it, so that the seeds can drop and spread more. And then that becomes, you know, our life force. And we're, you know, it's filled with water, you know, fruit, and we're mainly water. It's electric. We're electric beings. You know, there's nothing electric in a dead body if you consume that. So, yeah, I mean, the Bible, people, that's, you know, that's a whole nother touchy subject that people get into. And I've studied, I mean, the Essenes, which are the you know, supposedly their group that raised Jesus, and they were raw vegan for them. You know, they were vegan. They were plant-based eaters.
Say that again. The Essenes? Is that a book?
The Essenes. Well, I mean, the Dead Sea Scrolls.
The
Essenes, okay. Were the ones that, you know, that supposedly that in the lost days of Jesus that he was raised with them, or even that he practiced a lot of ways that were close to like a Buddhist monk. And yeah, that, no, that, you know, sure. So, you know, the Bible, that's a whole nother thing to get into. And I've had so many people, you know, that want to debate on this kind of, on this topic, you know, when it comes to what God would have said. But to me, like, to harm another being, like, if I don't have to, like, I know that I can eat and survive and eat very delicious, amazing foods, and I don't have to contribute to any suffering of any other being. We have enough suffering in this world. And in order to solve, to get to a healing space, it starts with how we treat our animals, you know, because, you know, you, to have compassion, you don't just stop just because, you know, human to human.
Right.
And if, no. And if you are going to kill it, like I say, I have more respect for people who go out and they can look the animal in its eye and they can kill it. And they do it themselves and then they take it home and whatever. Versus somebody who just goes in and buys it in the store and says, well, I could never kill it. I could never kill it. Then you shouldn't eat it.
You ever see these Africans that go out on a hunt? And they look for lion prides, and when they find a lion pride, whenever the lion pride kills a fresh kill, they go and you know, kind of like, they don't kill the lions, but they go and just basically strong arm the meat from the lion, you know. Mm-hmm. So these man eaters see these Africans coming, this tribe of Africans, and it's about 6 or 7 or 8 of them. But the way that the Africans, you know, present themselves and approach the lions, it makes them seem bigger. And, mm-hmm. and you know, so they approach them, the lions, like that. And they just go up to the lions, and the lion could have just killed the zebra, and they approach the lions and they take the zebra and they start cutting slabs of meat off the lion, off the zebra, and taking it back to their village. And I'm like, wow, like to be able to just to do that, like, it's just a whole nother level of, you know, boldness and bravery and manhood and all, you know, all kinds of stuff strong words we could throw in there. But
I've never heard that, but that makes more sense, I suppose, because it's already
actually on YouTube. This is actually like,
you're taking the meat from the animal that's, and if you look at all the carnivores on the planet, they don't have long lifespans. They live very short lifespans. Yeah. Carnivores and omnivores live shorter than vegetable eaters. I mean, that's the way it is. You know, that's how it was made. That's how we were all made. So,
but you know, you said something. You said, you know, do you want your body to be a graveyard? And that was kind of catchy to me as well. Because it made me think about, like, you know, eating dead meat and eating, you know, dead flesh and carcasses and stuff like that. And I know that, you know, we don't need meat to survive. I can even go back to my first point of what I was talking about God and the Bible and all that, and how we were put in the environment. So when people, you know, in the environment to eat trees and stuff. So when people say, oh, you're not supposed to eat plants, you're not supposed to, you know, plants got feelings too. But I look at it, and that's kind of where I go back. When I hear people say we're not supposed to eat plants and stuff, I just go back and look at the theory in the Bible and how we were put in the garden. And I'm like, I think if you want to go with that theory, I think we were made to eat plants, you know. I think we were.
But even people who say that, like, if you eat meat, you're eating more plants, because that animal ate way more plants than you would consume if you didn't eat the animal. And then at the rate that this planet is going, if the population continues to eat meat, mainly in the West, the way that we do, we will not have a planet left. It's not, like, we cannot sustain a plant, a meat-based diet. Like most humans in the West are eating meat three times a day, three meals a day. And the factory farming and everything is killing our planet. Like we won't make it. So it's not even a matter of just like what you want at this point, really. Mm. You know, it's about what we need to do. And I'm not even telling everybody they need to be vegan, vegetarian right now. I'm saying just less. Eat yes, a lot less. Like if you're going to phase it out, perfect, beautiful. That's best. But if you can at least just eat less, you know, they're just take a little bit less than you would maybe, you know, instead of three times a day, once a week, start that way.
Wow, I get it. I get it. No.
Yeah,
I would advise people. 5 hours.
We might have to have a part two and three because there's just so many, you know, so much that we can go to with this topic.
Trust me, I know we're gonna go a part two and a part three on this. You're an expert of knowledge here on just things that I can, you know, talk to you about. But we still got some time left before we do. Make it a part two. So I do want to get these last few questions out to you because I kind of think that this is cool for people to know. And that is, what are some protein hacks people can do to improve their energy, manage their weight, to be a more mindful person? Because I heard you say mindful, eating mindful. And I remember Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a book called Mindful Eating. And I want to go get that book. But so if we're going to be mindful eaters, and what are some protein hacks people can do to improve their energy and manage their weight?
Well, I don't know if necessarily protein hack would be anywhere involved in it. I think that we're the only animal on the planet that needs to think about what we're eating and like figure out calories and all that stuff. It's ridiculous. I mean, we're just supposed to eat a whole food plant-based diet, like as natural as close to the plant as to nature as possible. You know, organic and possible. If you just eat mainly plant-based diet, not processed foods, you know, not bottled foods and all that stuff. If you just consume a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables, I mean, we're electric beings. We are all about electricity. So we need to be consuming foods that are alive, that are living. Mm-hmm. So even if you're eating cooked foods, you should be eating raw foods along with it, like at least 50-50, drinking a lot of water, not eating as much, you know, eating, you know, maybe whether eating smaller meals or like just nibbling frequently throughout the day on like fruits and nuts and things like that. With the summer right now, people could do a lot, like you could drink your meals, you know, with fruits and smoothies. There's protein powders out there. Hemp is an amazing full complete protein. You can get all amino acids in hemp. It's very, very beneficial to the body. But we also need to be getting more fiber, you know, and that's going to play a big role. I don't think people are consuming enough of the greens, you know. Chlorophyll is only one molecule away from blood, human blood. So that is very, very important that we consume more greens, dark leafy greens, oxygen rich food, alkaline food. So, you know, there's every food, just like our bodies, we have a pH. We should be consuming high alkaline foods, oxygen rich foods. Acidic foods really create a base for disease. You know, and mindful eating in a sense of like not just sitting in front of the TV and wolfing your food down, like sitting down, praying over the food first, giving thanks for the food, where it came from, what it took to get it there, you know, and then every bite, like really thinking about like the flavors and the feeling, the consistency of it, the chew, like if the more mindful you are with your food, even if you're eating something that you feel like you feel guilty for, like you're out there, you know, hiding behind something, eating like, I don't know, a Twinkie or something. Like if you're more mindful that you want to eat that and you are appreciative of it, it'll have a more positive effect than negative than if you're feeling guilty while you're eating it on top of that. So, you know, the way that we're perceiving our food as it's going in, even water molecules, going to Dr. Emoto's work on how water can change from our thoughts, what we say to it, you know, that's also a huge part of the our food as we're consuming it as well. That's why, you know, the prayer over the food is really important. So Being mindful is beyond just saying, okay, well, I'm not going to consume this animal because I don't want to hurt, I don't want to cause the suffering, but also just being mindful that you're eating, and as you're eating, it's becoming you, you know, it's becoming a part of you, and to always be grateful and appreciative of that, because there are people who literally don't have food right now at all, and they are starving, they are protein deficient because they're not eating anything, you know, so that's even... But mindful eating is a whole other like hour at least, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I can guarantee you we can go on about that. The moment I heard you talk about like the oxygen rich foods, dark leafy greens, I was like, yeah, we're gonna be doing another one on this one. But I wanna ask one more question before I ask my favorite three questions I like to ask at the end of the show. But I wanna ask one more question. I think this is a question people wanna know. Soy, is it vegan? Is it not vegan? Should we consume it? Should we not consume it? What's up with soy? Because there's a lot of confusion about soy.
Well, soy is it's a bean, so it is vegan. There's no animal involved in soy. There is a lot of controversy on soy. I mean, George Washington Carver had once said that soy was to be made, make plastic out of it, and you can. It contains a high amount of plant-based estrogen. I know many people who eat soy and are fine. They eat tofu, and you see it in the Asian culture. They eat a lot of fermented soy. Fermented is a little easier for the body than the whole soybean itself. But personally, I find soy to be very disruptive to my system. On a backstory, really, really quickly, when I first went veg, I didn't do it for health. So I ate soy everything because this was like year 2000, and there weren't many options. You had soy, and soy was the hype. So it was tofu, soy milk, soy cheese, mock meats made out of soy. So I was eating a lot of processed soy foods. And within about, I'd say 10 months, I had hypothyroidism. So people, you know, you can be vegan and do it very unhealthy. Just because you're not eating animal products doesn't mean you're going to be healthy. I mean, there's a lot of people doing it out there eating French fries and, you know, and tofu cubes or whatever. And like, that's not going to be a good thing. So people seem to be okay. I have had male friends say that as they consumed soy, they were like crying at commercials all of a sudden, like they felt like they were getting almost like breast growth. So it depends on the individual. For me, I had thyroid issues and it took me a while to get my body back. And I had to stop all soy. I had stopped wheat. I had stopped soy because I know even now if I consume it, I can do it in moderation. But when I get too much, I start to feel all those symptoms coming back again. So my body personally can't handle the estrogen in the soy. So I try not to. I don't personally use it in my cooking very often unless it's a request.
You answered that. That was perfect. That was a perfect answer to that question. All right. Well, getting away from all the vegan questions, I wanna ask. What are some things besides cooking vegan food do you like to do to keep yourself sane, focused, and dedicated to your purpose in life?
Ha. Well, those are great questions. I mean, for me to keep sane, I find there's a fine line between sanity and insanity in this world. I love anything for me is humor. If I can find a joke, a laugh, the lighter side of things, I'm there all the time. So I keep, you know, my spirit light. I like to help bring laughter and joy to people around me and keep that child, like, I think it was even a Jesus quote, I could be wrong, but it said to be childlike, not childish. I have like forever child in me. So I always like to have fun and be in awe at everything, like the littlest things, just like go back to what, you know, what's special, like a flower or, you know, like just very simple, like blowing bubbles. Like it's like simple things like that, that I think, adulting, you start to lose and get in this serious mode. But aside from that, you know, I love to, meditation is an everyday thing for me. I have to find the time to meditate, to just stay, to get a moment where I'm clear and I'm allowing, you know, myself to not be thinking so much and just, be being and present and just focusing on the fact that I'm breathing and that I'm here. And then I find that things and answers that I'm looking for will just come. The more that I've meditated, the more I've been able to manifest, the faster I can manifest, meaning things come, things, people, experiences just come, right in time. But nature, you know, as much as I can get into nature, connecting, being with animals, hiking, the beach, being with the people that I love, you know, just the simple things, you know, that's the most, to me, it's the most important, traveling when possible and just experiencing, and seeing things from different perspectives, listening to other people tell, you know, and then doing my best to kind of help maybe lighten what's happening with someone else. So that's pretty much like my regular daily experience. That keeps me centered. That keeps me, you know, feeling, you know, this positive and like on track. Like whatever comes, like I got it, you know.
Nice. Being all of everything. I like that. That was pretty cool and a great reminder to keep that childlike spirit alive. And I'm agreeing with that. And one of the things you said too was hiking. Somehow, some way, I don't know how. But all of a sudden, this hiking thing has found its way in my life, and now I do a lot of it. Nature is a big part of my life, and I love to get out into it. So I agree on getting out in nature, hiking.
Grounding, right?
Grounding. And keeping that childlike spirit. So I'm going to ask three questions that I love to ask at the end of every show. And these are the three questions. They're just more meaningful to me because it makes me feel like you're passing something along to people. And I think it opens eyes for others to see these same qualities in their life. Because there's always somebody in their life that's doing these things for them. And now you understand. So first is, what is something you are most grateful for?
One thing?
I'm it grateful. Could be one thing.
I'm grateful for being here, being in this body, experiencing, breathing, being healthy. Feeling good. I'm great. I mean, geez, I'm grateful for everything, you know. I'm grateful for even the adversities and things that at one point I would curse out. You know, I'm grateful for it all. Because I guess like health and feeling good, because I have so many people that I love and care about that are like really going through some hard things and physical things. And if you don't have your health, like if your physical body is not like up to par and feeling good, like nothing's gonna really flow for you. So it's very, very important to feel good. So I give thanks that I feel great. I'm healthy, you know, I'm breathing. I don't have any ailments or anything going on. I have extremely healthy, vibrant, successful children. I have amazing friends. I have, you know, just, I feel like the things that I have to be grateful for only expand and multiply like every minute.
That's cool. I like that. That's pretty cool. You know, you're keeping that mindful, that mindset open to things that you, like you said, you are thankful for your adversities. And I think a lot of people don't see their adversities as being like a great challenge for them to overcome and be grateful for, because there's some things that happened in the course of the last couple of days with me. And I just looked at them and just was like, okay, you know what? This is what I'm feeling. I acknowledge it, but I go on. And I'm like, okay, it's going to help me grow, you know? But I want to ask this other one. Can you name one book, one movie, not altogether, but name one book, movie, or song that still inspires you today? One book, movie, or song. It's not, you don't have to answer all three. It's just answering one. You
wow.
can pass somebody.
Jeez, one book, movie. There's so many. So to just do one, that's rough.
That's why I say do one, because I know there's a lot. So you got to choose this one, because if you say a lot, you might go into a lot.
You know, I would say the very simple Esther Hicks, Abraham Manifestation, Asking You Shall Receive is a very great book for, you know, just getting a basic understanding of how our thoughts create our reality and how we do create our experiences. You know, we have that power. I think anything that helps you to remind yourself that you're way more powerful than you give yourself credit for, that we are the creators of our existence. I mean, I would say Waking Life, What the Bleep Do We Know, as far as quantum physics, those documentaries are powerful. I think they really help expand. There's a really amazing book called The World Peace Diet. Dr. Will Tuttle, he's a friend of mine. He gets in, it's not so much about diet, but it's about the suppression of the feminine energy on the planet and how that is pretty much at the core of all of our problems. And when we, you know, do these things that we do to use female animals for their products, what that really means in the big picture. So that's another really powerful book.
That's pretty cool. Esther Hicks and The World Peace Diet. So I got those books. Cool. I don't got them, but I mean, I got them down so I could pass them on to people. But name one person. It doesn't have to be the only person. I mean, but name one person, because we have many people in our lives. But name one person who has greatly impacted or influenced your life. I know you're going to say, oh, I can't just choose one, but I know it doesn't have to be the number one person in your life. It just has to be one that has greatly impacted or influenced you.
The one, I mean, I guess I would say I'd put it as two, and my daughters. I mean,
your daughters.
They've impacted my life in a way that I've been able to see from into generations beyond myself, like to be able to see like improvements of what I would for myself, like the way that I would improve myself. If I could fine tune me, you know, that's them. And they reteach me every day the importance of the simplicity of, you know, of life, the fun, you know, why I even went veg, really. I mean, the reason I was even kind of starting into it was because I was having a child, I was pregnant, and I wanted to do better. So my children have, they've literally transformed like everything within me. And, that's like the most powerful, you know, experience I've had in this lifetime, is to bring forth two other beings who still teach me, and they'll remind me of things I taught them that I needed reminders when I needed it. Be like, you know, mom, remember such and such. And I'll be like, wow, you're right. You know, I taught you that. And thank you for that reminder. And it just keeps coming back, you know, and it's, wow. It's really beautiful.
Wow. That's beautiful. I think, your daughter's was a great, you know, just a great outlook for you to keep that perspective for yourself. Just keep looking at them. That's pretty cool. So here's what I ask for you to do now, Chef D Sauce. Chef D Sauce is, you know, I've had fun with you. And I think that you have something to offer the people. And this is where I want you to take a moment to get into your flow, what I call feeling love operate within. And this is where you basically just speak from the heart on what you want to pass on, what you may want the people to know a little bit more about you, or anything that you feel you just want to give the world, something that you can leave with your last words, as your last words. So I would ask that you go into that flow space, that feeling love operate within flow, and speak to the people. Take a minute to give the people something that you want to leave with them.
All right. Well, you know, I want everyone to remember that they are loved, and that they are powerful, and that they're here for a reason, a purpose, and they're important. And that, you know, you may be going through some things, and it seems like, you know, you may not be able to change, whether it's your diet or, you know, your situation, whatever the case is. You know, if you really get into that tune, like I would just say, get in tune with yourself the best way that you can, and eating healthier, meditating, taking walks in nature, being it's very important that we know ourselves and why we're here, in a sense that, you know, we have an impact, every single one of us, and to find what that is, and do whatever it is that you can to support that, to love yourself enough to eat right, to make that conscious decision to eat, you know, a healthier choice versus something you know is going to harm you, or, you know, to stand up for yourself more, and not necessarily put up with things that you know are harmful to you, even if that means you have to distance yourself from people that you care about. But to get really in tune with your power, and that you can change your life. You change your mind, you change your life. If you change your thoughts and change the way that you see things, like when you change, this is a Wayne Dyer quote, but when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. So it really is all perspective. So, you know, if you retrain your mind where you're in control of your thoughts rather than letting your thoughts control you, that will be a game changer for your life without a doubt. And there's always, every second you have a choice to choose your thought. What are you thinking about? You know, or every choice you make every second, you choose to put something in your mouth, listen to a certain song, watch a certain movie. It's going to become you. So to be really mindful of what you're allowing into your space, into your energy, into your life, and to just be the most compassionate, loving version that you can be. And often that means that, you know, we have to pause and instead of react, like respond to things. And just don't beat yourself up if, you know, it doesn't always go the way you're trying. Just know that you do the best you can, and until you do better, till you know better. And then when you know better, you do better.
Wow. Dr. Wayne Dyer, my favorite all-time author. I have all his books, and that's my internet mentor and teacher. And I go to him for everything I need to learn when it comes to spiritual mindfulness practices and stuff like that. And yes,
can't go wrong with Wayne.
Yeah, no, you cannot go wrong with him. Rest in peace, the great honorable Dr. Dwayne Dyer. And that's just my teacher right there. That's my God. I love him to death. You know, I want to say this to you, Chef D. Chef D Sauce, you know, with a name like Sauce, how can you not be a chef? Chef D, I want to say thank you. I want to say I appreciate you. I appreciate what you bring into this world. I appreciate what you are offering. I appreciate your study. I appreciate you going and learning about yourself and what it is that you do. I just speak greatness over you. I speak just mindful practices that you just continue to do over you. I speak high vibrational energy of people that come around you and energies that come around you. I speak just, you know, sheer motivation to you, that you just have this spirit of wanting to do more and more and more, and you don't need anybody outside source. You just have this self-motivation thing going on. I speak the spirit of love upon you and your life, your daughters. And I just speak prosperity and success to you. I speak that you go on to be the greatest success that you want to be, and that you let nothing ever stop you. And I just speak that all the things you desire, you wish for, you hope for, come to pass, come true, come to fruition, and that you manifest everything you think about. And I just, you know, add that you just continue to do what you're doing, living in your purpose, being in pursuit of your purpose, adding this value to the world that you brought to my show. Forever, I'm thankful for that. I am grateful for you. And I just want to say, you know, with the utmost gratitude to you, thank you. Thank you for doing my show. Thank you for bringing your mindfulness, your knowledge, your wisdom, your input, and adding just a great topic to the show. Thank you, Chef D.
Wow, that was so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you very much. Greatly appreciated. Right back to you as well. Thank you so much.
Gratitude. I will be in touch with you very, very, very soon.
All right. Okay? I look forward to that. Thank you.
Thank you for joining the show.
All right. Thanks. Peace.
All right, y'all. That's the show. Thank you for tuning in, and thank you for listening once again. If you'd like to get in further contact with Chef D Sauce, you can find her at Facebook at Dynamis Day. That's DynamisDai. That's on Facebook. Or you can find her on Instagram at Chef.D.Sauce. Sauce is spelled SAUSE. And that's if you want to get in contact with her for vegan catering events. She does private chefing. She does, events, parties, and all those other things. You can contact her there just by inboxing her, DMing her, and getting her contact information from there. That's the show. Thank you again for listening. I appreciate you for tuning in. Don't forget to hit subscribe to the In Pursuit of Purpose podcast. And you know how it goes. I love you. I love me. I love us. Peace.